Well, the parable that we've just read is sometimes called the parable of the unjust steward. Sometimes it's called the parable of the dishonest manager. And sometimes it's called the parable of the shrewd rascal. But whatever we call it, it doesn't really matter. This parable has caused some difficulties, some perplexity, for these reasons. How exactly was he dishonest? Second, why does the owner commend him for his actions? And third, why does Jesus hold up this crafty rascal to us as a model to follow? So let's look closely at what Jesus is telling us here. Thank you. Verse 1 sets the scene. There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And a wealthy landowner hears that charges have been made against him. There are accusations floating around. In verse 2, we've got the first interaction between the owner and the manager. He called him and said to him, "What is this I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager." And then verses 3 through 7, we've got the interaction between the manager and the servants, the farmers. Then in verse 8, we have the second interaction between the owner and the manager, who commended him for his shrewdness. And then the second half of verse 8 and verse 9, Jesus makes a comment and an application of the story. It's a very Middle Eastern kind of story. People in the Middle East are very familiar with this context, even today. The main character is this manager or steward. Jesus tells this story, first of all, to the disciples, but then also to some Pharisees and some people in the background who are listening. Okay, verse 1. There was a rich man who had a manager. The rich man is a wealthy landowner, probably an absentee landlord, who came home maybe once a year to check on his property. There were many absentee landlords like that in Galilee at this time. And Jesus mentioned several of them in his parables. This absentee landlord rented out small plots of land, small farms, usually between 4 and 8 acres in size. And his tenants had to pay him a fixed amount of their crops every year, whether it was fruit trees or wheat or whatever it may be. And the owner, we're not told much about him, but he appears to be an honorable man, a just man, a man capable of mercy. The manager, the main character, is a property manager who has legal authority and responsibility to do what property managers always have to do. I live in an apartment complex. The lady who is the property manager has several apartment buildings that she's responsible for. She interviews tenants. She takes their deposit. She has them sign a rental agreement which describes the responsibilities of both tenant and owner. She evicts people who don't pay the rent. She inspects the apartments from time to time and sends her handyman out to fix things that need to be fixing. Well, this man did roughly the same things for the landowner. he stood between the landowner and the tenants. Now, up to this point, the manager has not been called dishonest. But an accusation has been made against him. We don't know by whom. The charge is that the manager is being somehow wasteful of the owner's property. They may have been due to corruption or laziness or incompetence. We don't know as yet. In verse 2, the owner confronts the manager. What's this I hear? He tells the manager he is to produce the written records for inspection because he's going to be fired. Well, that's always shocking news to somebody. They're suddenly going to be fired. And he's naturally devastated. But notice he doesn't try to defend himself. He doesn't offer excuses. He knows he's messed up. And his whole life is now about to blow up. So, verse 3, the manager says to himself, what shall I do? What am I going to do now? Once he fires me, I'm out of a job. I've got no income. I'm not strong enough to dig. Farmers and day laborers do that. And he's physically not up to it. What's the alternative? There's only one alternative, that's begging. Well, he doesn't want to turn to begging. That's humiliating. He's too proud to do that. So he comes up with a plan. It's a plan to provide for his own future. He's going to feather his nest. He knows the law of hospitality in the Middle East, a law that still operates today. A law that says that anyone who visits a town or any location must be welcomed by a homeowner. He must be shown hospitality, usually in the form of a meal, sometimes in the form of being invited to stay the night. The first Sunday that I worshipped at Baraka Presbyterian Church in Bethlehem, in Palestine, I was invited to lunch after the service by the pastor and his wife immediately. I wasn't surprised, that's normal. So this manager is going to do something to ingratiate himself with the tenants. He's going to do them a big favor so they will love him and admire him, and they will provide him with meals and maybe board as well in the future. He's going to show them grace. Great grace. So what's the plan? Summoning his master's debtors one by one, he says to the first, how much do you owe my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, take your bill and write 80. Well, that's a pretty good deal. They have to bring their bill or promissory note, which they had to write in their own handwriting. That was the custom. And the first tenant owed 100 measures of oil. This is olive oil from the trees. So the manager told him to change the amount to just 50 measures. He cuts it in half. The second man owed 100 measures of wheat. The manager told him to cut the amount to 80. Now, these are large debts. 100 measures of olive oil was 600 gallons. Now it's reduced to 300. 100 measures of wheat was equivalent to 1,000 bushels of wheat. Now it's just 800. So what's the manager doing? How could he alter the amount owed to the master? Well, the answer is because of the taxation system in Palestine in Jesus' day. In the early days, the children of Israel, when they came into the land of Israel, they were told by God they had to pay him a tithe. This was to go to the management of the tabernacle and later the temple. 40% of the produce was to go to the Lord. But when Israel chose to have a human king in addition to God, which was an insult to God, of course, the king added another 10% in taxation to the whole population in order to pay for his bureaucracy and his lavish lifestyle. And then when a foreign empire occupied the land and appointed their own local king, the emperor added another 10% in taxation for himself to defray the cost of the occupation. So the poor peasants had to pay a total of 30% in taxation. That's an enormous burden, especially in years of bad weather, when the wheat and the trees have not been very fruitful. And to add insult to injury, people who collected the taxes from them worked for the Romans, and they used to add an extra cut for themselves. These people were not popular. Everybody knew what they were doing. So this estate manager was evidently adding his own commission to the amount demanded by the owner, not to mention the tithe to God. So what on earth is he going to do? Well, he is removing his cut, his illegal cut, and he's returning it back to the tenants. All of a sudden, he's popular. His future is secure. And then in verse 8, a rather surprising event. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. Instead of rebuking or criticizing the rascal, he commends what he's done. He understands what he's done. Does that mean he admires his honesty, dishonesty? No, he's admiring his shrewdness, providing for his own future. He knows the manager is a crafty rascal, but he has to admire his ingenuity, his shrewdness. And then later in verse 8, Jesus adds a comment. He says, "For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light." Jesus has already said that he is the light of the world, and he has called his disciples to follow him and to be the light of the world when he goes. So Jesus is saying, in other words, that worldly people are usually more shrewd than the sons of light, than Christians. They don't have the scruples that Christians do. Now, unrighteous wealth, sometimes referred to as filthy lucre, it just means money, income. And unbelievers are very often better at handling it than believers. We have scruples. They don't. It's amazing how clever some businessmen and women sometimes are. So Jesus is telling us in verse 9 to make friends of people by blessing them in their lives, showing them grace. And we will be welcomed into the Father's house in heaven. So, we can build God's kingdom and bless other people, both believers and unbelievers, by using our resources. Our resources may be money, time, our homes, our cars, inviting people that we normally wouldn't hang out with, into our homes for a meal, giving them a ride to church or to the doctor with our cars. That's the wise steward, the prudent manager. To lay up treasures in heaven, which last forever. There is a day of reckoning. Let us be prepared. That's one way of being prepared. He is commended for showing grace, as the landowner had done. Now, we have worldly concerns, financial concerns, the same as everybody else. But the most important concern for believers is our relationship with God in this life and in eternity. There's a little biography of Jesus that we read in Galatians. Chapter 5 and verse 22. The Apostle Paul is talking here about the disciples of Jesus, people like us. And he's saying, the fruit of the Spirit, we've been given the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit, the evidence of the Spirit, is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. That's a biography of Jesus. But it's held out to us as something we are to show to the world by showing grace and bearing this kind of fruit in our lives, the fruit of the Spirit. And that happens when we copy Jesus. The one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. So let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we don't give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. That's the biblical challenge to us this morning. Let us pray.